self-interested thinking pervades almost all organizations, institutions, and facilities. At the policy level, there is no evident effort to coordinate workforce production with real health needs. Health workforce planning is in its infancy and has little impact on the way health workers are produced, deployed, and managed. As a result, a commercial market philosophy pervades all programs of teaching and training institutions, including the best government-supported agencies, such as, I'm afraid, our own UP Manila. Market orientation has influenced all the programs for health workforce production. In medicine, the number of schools, the curriculum, and even the type of faculty is determined by the philosophy of what the market will bear. The medical professions, as well as the other health professions, are in general self-centered, protective of professional privileges, status, and opportunities. More than two decades ago, there was a call for reorientation of the programs for training health workers to adapt these to the WHO's goal of health for all through primary health care. 9 days from today, you will also hear from Dr. Ernesto Domingo that the literature that analyzed the shortcomings of existing systems for health workforce production in the 1980s amazingly still reads true today. Before I summarize, a word about Mang Pandoy, the poster boy of poverty during the presidential campaign of 1992. As you all know, Mang Pandoy died of tuberculosis, a typical disease of the poor, last week at the age of 63, the life expectancy of males in his social circumstances. He lived, in the words of Professor Randy David, within an unjust structure. This structure includes the Philippine healthcare system. To summarize, the state of the nation's health reflects the failure of the Philippine healthcare system to resolve the great inequalities between the rich few and the many poor. Basic health services, as well as tertiary care for the majority of Filipinos, are inadequate, fragmented, inefficient, and incomplete. For many in the lowest income groups, these services are also inaccessible and unaffordable. The Philippines' health sector is dominated by commercial interests of a segment of the system that is not really about health outcomes, but is primarily about bottom-line profits. The pharmaceutical industry and other enterprises trading in healthcare goods. Pricing and marketing of pharmaceuticals and other healthcare products distort national expenditures on these items in such a way that essential life-saving goods are either too expensive or absent from the market, while items of dubious value dominate trade and commerce. Much of this commercial dominance of our health system is a result of a failure so gross as to constitute a default of public financing for health. The combined weight of the uncoordinated spending for health by national government, local governments, and our national health insurance program has been so low and so weak that it has driven our health system into a debilitating dependence on out-of-pocket payments by patients. Human resources for health are insufficiently educated, inappropriately trained, and poorly motivated to address the healthcare concerns of most Filipinos in the setting in which they live. As a result, poorly compensated government health workers are unable to influence behaviors of their high-earning private sector counterparts within the change-resistant environments of their respective professional organizations. Reforms in all these areas must be based on the recognition enshrined in the Philippine Constitution that health is a human right. Because these changes require major transfers of resources between important segments of society, they must be government-led. Structural change in government health systems must be implemented to enable them to firmly guide the changes required in the way the private sector and civil society participate in healthcare. Because of their key roles in health research and the production of human resources for health, state academic institutions, particularly at the national level, should be the main agents in the change in the transformation of the health system. They should align their programs to the realities of health services as defined by policies and programs of government, both locally and nationally. To ensure that all specific inequities are addressed, reforms must be firmly anchored on the principle of social solidarity. Those who are well are to care for those who are ill. Those who can afford to pay for services should also pay the cost for those who are too poor to afford them. The principle implies that the provision of health goods and services must be seen as a service motivated by social obligation rather than a business driven by profit. To ensure that reforms permeate the entire health sector, they must take place within all four domains in which people are involved in health. The health system must ensure that no Filipino will have to pay out of pocket for essential health care. Health organizations and institutions must reinvent themselves to ensure that no sick Filipino would ever be turned away for lack of money to pay for their services, and that no Filipino would have to sign a promissory note before discharge after having received such services. Healthcare providers must commit themselves to ensuring that no Filipino with a health problem is ever left unattended by a health professional. Individuals, families, and communities must be enlightened and empowered so that they can demand equity, quality, and effectiveness in health. This should include not just the poor majority, but also a critical mass among the rich minority and the political elite. In short, it is time to elevate the level of politicization of health from that of parochial self-interest and petty patronage to a national issue of critical concern. The question may well be asked, is this all a pipe dream? The answer is no. The resources are there. Government spending of 200 billion pesos annually on health is not unrealistic in the context of a national budget of 1.5 trillion pesos. What is necessary is the political will to commit government resources to social services as the top priorities of development. This will enable quantum increases in coordinated health spending by national and local governments and the social health insurance program within a national health reform framework. While initially such efforts should focus on strengthening services for the poor, there should be a clear understanding that the system will eventually cover all socioeconomic classes. This is necessary to avoid developing a two-tier healthcare system that will eventually exacerbate inequity. To generate such political commitment, health reform advocates must build alliances, starting with the national institutions, but eventually extending to all concerned groups, institutions, and most importantly, communities. These alliances must commit to generate support for a thorough restructuring of the entire health sector, public and private, over the next 10 or 15 years. These three factors, a quantum increase in coordinated government spending, public support for reforms, and an initial focus on the poor, if introduced to the political process in the next 3 years, can make a reality what many countries already have and Filipinos can now only dream about: universal health care. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Dr. Romualdez. You may now take your seat at our table. We'd like to call on Dr. Ramon Paterno and Professor Mario Tagiwalo to join Dr. Romualdez on stage.
Honored guests, colleagues, and fellow students of the health sector, good afternoon. How do you react to such a comprehensive lecture? And maybe I've kept my reaction intentionally short so that, well, we are more interested in hearing what the audience would like to say. But perhaps what I can do is to point out the areas where we can possibly react to his lecture. For example, the principle of health as a human right, for me it implies that government and the public sector must not default, but must take the lead in ensuring health for all. Ensuring health as a right cannot be left for market forces to determine. What then would be the role of the private sector? But then we have many private practitioners in the audience, and I believe they are in a better position to react to that question. What is the role of academe and health human resource production? But that precisely will be the topic of Dr. Domingo 9 days from now. There are also other important issues like health financing and the pharmaceutical industry, each of which can be a topic of a centennial lecture. So let me just react to two areas. First, can we achieve equity in health if society in general remains iniquitous? And secondly, how do we achieve universal health care? Is it possible to have an equitable health system if society at large remains basically inequitable? Even with universal health care, can we improve health if the economic policies of our government leads to growth which NEDA characterizes as a growth which does not impact the poor? The plight of Mang Pandoy is the example of such a situation. I believe, therefore, that reforms in the health sector that are now being proposed would need reforms in society that should lead to growth that results in the improvement of the living and social conditions of all and not just the few. I now come to my second point. If we all agree that universal health care is something that we want for our country, how do we achieve universal health care? Let us look at the history of social health insurance in Germany. Germany, around the period of the 1800s, was in the later phase of its industrialization with a growing working class and the rising influence of the social democratic parties which represented their interests. The conservative forces represented by the government of Chancellor Bismarck were uneasy about these developments. So to stop the rising influence of the social democratic parties, they did two things. First was to ban the social democratic parties. Second was to pass social health insurance legislation for the workers in 1883. So that now we can see that social security benefits, concessions to the working class as to their working and living conditions, are actually the products of the organized people's movements and the fear of the conservative governments of the power of the organized people. We cannot expect government from out of the blue to suddenly decide to spend more for health and social services rather than for defense, security, debt servicing, or self-aggrandizement, my euphemism for widespread corruption. Universal health care will only become a reality if we, the academe, the service providers, NGOs, but more importantly, the people themselves, see the value of universal health care and demand for it. We who are gathered here, hopefully, have not just come here to hear a centennial lecture, and after the lecture, we leave and go our separate ways. Can we start an alliance for universal health care from all those gathered in this science hall today? Thus, I would like to believe today is just the opening salvo for universal health care in the Philippines. Thank you.
I do not know about you, but I found the lecture heart-stopping, mind-numbing, and ultimately painful. You have to be a masochist to enjoy that lecture, and maybe we shouldn't call this the centennial lecture, but rather the centennial torture. Let me first congratulate Dr. Romualdez for a lecture that is above all faithful to the authentic spirit and real substance of the University of the Philippines. It was a lecture that is committed to the truth that only science and reason can yield, a lecture that aspires to the greater common good that is consistent with humanism, and a lecture that is devoted to the interest of the Filipino nation that must be the mission of a state university like UP. Dr. Romualdez's lecture is uncompromising, disturbing, and ultimately subversive. He asks a fundamental question. If our country has progressed so much, why is the health of many of us still so poor? And if UP is so great, why has it not made our nation healthier? Dr. Romualdez offers an answer that should incite us to action in the next 10, 20, or even 100 years. Our nation will not become healthier unless the sickest among us get better. And our inequalities in health will not go away unless our public spending for health increases radically. Let me just draw two particularly infuriating ideas from the lecture of Dr. Romualdez. First of all, I would note that nearly half of our total spending for health goes to pharmaceuticals. Most of the income of pharmaceutical companies in turn flow to Europe and America, where these companies are based. On the other hand, because so much of our spending for health goes to drugs, very little is left for compensating our thousands of health workers, from doctors to nurses and technicians. Richer countries in Europe and America making money from developing countries like us are then able to offer better pay that take our own health workers away. you can see that our overpayment for drugs partly causes our underpayment of health professionals, partly leading them to leave our country that benefit to for countries that benefited from our overpayment for drugs. We are in fact financing our own impoverishment and deprivation. And yet, we have merely described the beast that condemns us to meager improvements in health. We still need to embrace the light that will set us free. And I believe that the light is the one that enlightened democratic politics can offer. We should bring these ideas of Dr. Romualdez to the arena of political debate and public education so that the coming elections in 2010 and the next administrations henceforth can be challenged by the goal of achieving universal health for all Filipinos, partly in response to this centennial lecture or torture, and partly to reassert our pride and dignity as a people. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Our panel is now ready for questions from the audience here in UP Manila and as well as from those in other campuses. Since we have very limited time, please keep your questions brief and direct to the point. So you have a question now from UP Diliman, and our moderator is Professor Flores. UP Diliman, please come in.
There is a question here from Daniel Issa of UP Lisnet, who reacted to the statement that was stated in the video that according to the doctor, genetic medicines are not as potent compared to branded drugs. How true is this?
It is not true at all. The generic medicines simply means a chemical that is sold as a drug for certain for specified conditions. No, brands are just names concocted by marketing people for the same exactly the same chemical. So, generic medicines are not at all inferior to branded medicines.
Okay, thank you. Can we have the question now? We're back to UP Manila. Can we have the question from Dr. Cabales?
I'd like to ask two questions. First is on a conceptual level. You've said that health improvements are a function of the health sector, changes or reforms. And Dr. Paterno has alluded to, in essence, a political reform that is needed. But to what extent are the other sectors, about how about education, public works, and social services, are they less important? The other question is on a pragmatic level. You talked about the need for realignment of financing towards basically a tax-based source. But what would be the tax incidence that way? What would be the, how much can the government earn, come up for a health kitty as compared to what is raised by what is admittedly an earmarked tax that is social health insurance? Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe Buching can expand this a little bit later on. But the fact is, what we are advocating is not just increase in funding just for health. No, we talked towards the latter part of my lecture, we talked about increased government support or a political decision that makes social services a priority for development. This in contrast to favoring businesses, favoring investments, and so forth. And I think it will have the same kind of consequence. But the fact is, we need reform. What we hope to achieve by emphasizing social services is that it takes more attention, it gives more attention to the entire spectrum of services, including, in fact, education. I mean, education, health, and welfare all go hand in hand. They all require the same level of investments. As far as sources of government funding, number one, the already existing sources of revenue are not fully used for health. For example, at present, BFAD income, only 25% of BFAD income, which it earns by registering, by doing the registration work and several other services, by the regulatory functions, they earn quite a great amount of money, and only recently have they been authorized to retain this income. And even then, they have been asked to settle for 50% for the time being. So what I'm saying is that not all the sources have actually been used for health. This is true even for the so-called sin taxes. The sin taxes, in fact, can still be raised and can still support greater, can still provide greater support. In addition, there are many more radical ways of redistributing the government budget without impairing other services. One basic source of contention all the time is the payments for our debt repayment. No, that is, debt consumes 40% of our budget. Some kind of play has to be, just a small amount of play within that amount will provide us with the sources. I don't know, Buching or Mario, you want to?
I think the point of the question, the two questions are quite clear to me, that in order to accomplish the kind of reform that Dr. Romualdez outlines, a larger political effort is required. First, in order to raise the necessary level of fiscal resources to finance the expansion of public spending in health, and second, to impact on changes in other sectors that will have a positive contribution to health, such as agriculture, education, and so on, and including peace and order and so on. Now, so I agree that the whole idea is that health improvements via health system reform of the scale that Dr. Romualdez outlined will likely happen only on a larger political change that enables our country to build a larger fiscal effort to finance the expansion that is being proposed.